Monster Man, Episode 451, Sea Lion to Shedu.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
In today's episode, we're going to be taking a look at four more monsters from Monstrous Manual, the 1993 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. But before we do that, let's take care of some business. First and most importantly, it's time to thank some new Patreon backers. Yes, these are people who've gone to patreon.com/monsterman and they have pledged as little as $1 a month to help support the show. And if, like today's backers, you pledge at the $2 or higher level, you'll also get access to my other podcast, Patron Deities, in which I talk about the myths and religions of the world and how to use them for inspiration in fantasy RPGs. So thank you very much, Emil Phillips and Tony Hogard. It means a lot to me that you're enjoying the show enough to want to support it. Also, if you're a Patreon subscriber of the podcast Strange Studies of Strange Stories, formerly HP Podcraft, you can hear me in the second of a two-part series covering Isaac Asimov's story, Bicentennial Man. I did the narration for this episode, and it was a lot of fun to record for Chris and Chad, who I've been listening to since back when my first appearance on the show as a guest was... a decade ago at this point. But it was a lot of fun to do, and nice to be a part, however small, of a podcast that I've had so much enjoyment from over the years. All right, let's look at some monsters. We start with the sea lion. This is not the aquatic mammal of our world, but a lion that lives in the sea. It has an illustration, which is a big improvement over the illustration in the Monster Manual, although conceptually, I like the Monster Manual one better. The Monster Manual illustration is clearly aiming at the idea of sea lions as, like, heraldic creatures, which is kind of what they are, I guess, but it doesn't really come off. I remain unconvinced about the creature itself. Is it a goof? Is that the idea? The DM says, you see a sea lion, and you think like, oh hey, little buddy wants some fish, but oh no, it's actually a deadly predator. That is a very kind of World of Cinnabar creature. There are these kind of wacky elements, like it might be a joke monster, and you can ride them, but other than that, it's not really wacky enough. They're treated as like just another species of aquatic mammals. And that kind of like mundanifying impulse is something that we're going to see a lot in today's episode, or at least more than once. You know, in the Mutant Chronicles setting, specifically in the game Warzone, there is a unit in the military of the Capital megacorporation called the Sea Lions, and I always thought this was a bit silly. The kind of insofar as Warzone has a single protagonist, it's one of the Sea Lions, the Capital hero, Mitch Hunter, although it doesn't, but you know what I mean. He's kind of one of the most prominent figures in the Warzone setting. And, like, it only just occurred to me a year or two ago that the reason that his unit are called the Sea Lions is that they're like Navy SEALs. They're like the SEALs, but different. I just assumed they were meant to be fierce like lions, but also they're in boats. I don't know. Speaking of just another race of aquatic mammals, next up we have the Selkies. Now, we've done Selkies a couple of times. First when they appeared in Monster Manual 2, and then also we did a special episode on them. In fact, they may be the other way around. And the Selkie is a creature from Scottish... My experience of it is from Scottish folklore and like Scottish folk music. But it is also found in other places. In particular, you do get Selkie stories in Ireland, and I think also in Scandinavia, although they have kind of different names. This is all covered in the main special episode. This entry has another big illustration upgrade, the Selkie in Monster Manual 2. Again, I like Jim Holloway as an illustrator, and not just because we have the same name, but it's not his best work, let's put it that way. This illustration is weird in a way I can't put my finger on. It's basically just a seal with hands. I would have loved to have seen Tony DiTerlizzi on this one because this is a fairy tale creature. And I feel like he's the artist of the team on this book who is most at home illustrating those kinds of like fantastical beings. But on the other hand, perhaps it's telling that he is not the guy doing that illustration, because the Selkie in Monstrous Manual, like its predecessor in Monster Manual 2, is actually not very fairy tale like. It is much more just like, it's a bit like a Triton or a merfolk or whatever, right? It's just another race of aquatic humanoid. And what this means is that there's a lot of setup on this creature, but there isn't necessarily a lot of payoff. So there's some stuff about how Selkies collect like pearls and other undersea treasures. They collect treasures from shipwrecks. So you could run into a community of Selkies if you're looking for some artifact that was lost at sea. That's cool. And they trade with humans. And indeed, there are Selkies who get so interested in humans and in trading with humans that they start to imitate human customs, like, for instance, wearing jewelry. They don't wear clothes because they live underwater, but they like to adorn themselves in other ways. So this makes sense, and it also acts as kind of like a piece of local color that is helpful. You should go for the most blinged out Selkie you can find if you need to negotiate with some Selkies, because that is the one that is best disposed toward humans. Okay, so far so good. But the problem is it then doesn't go anywhere. So, like, imagine that we find out that, you know, the reason this old fisherman has all these pearls is that he's meeting with this mysterious person on, like, the sea cliffs at night, and they're all, like, jeweled up, and then you follow them and you realize they're a Selkie. But so what? There's no reason to have a sense of mystery about it, because there's no reason to not just be like, oh yeah, Selkies. The archetypal Selkie story, which is the one about the fisherman who has a wife who comes from a mysterious place, and it turns out that she's a Selkie, and one day she steals her sealskin back and leaves, that is not present here at all, despite the fact that, like, that's what Selkie stories are about. Not 100%, there are other ones, but it's a pretty big part of it. So this, again, lengthened entry doesn't add new ideas or new ways to interact with the Selkie, just more details to the kind of not that inspiring ways that you could have done it previously. This book in general is very concerned with that kind of, like, mundane stuff. There's a lot of taking the fantastic and putting it in mundane contexts in this edition of D&D, and this is not really something that appeals to me very much personally. I also said in my notes, like, this entry is more than twice as long as the Monster Manual 2 entry, but it's not more than twice as good. Next up we have the Shadow. This is a monster that is not illustrated in its first appearance, and so this is its first illustration, which is kind of a cartoony monster with, like, a big jaw and curly horns. I'm not wild about that. I like the Shadow to be a little bit more generic. I always thought of it as having the kind of appearance of a person's shadow, but what do I know? The first sentence of this entry uses the word shadowy to describe the Shadow, a monster made from shadow. I feel like that's really not trying. Tenebrous would have been fine, you know? The sense of not having the ability, like not being permitted to add new concepts to this book, really stands out in the Shadow entry, where we get a description that says shadows spend their time, quote, roaming aimlessly, close quotes, around the graveyards and other spooky locations that they choose to inhabit. Roaming aimlessly. They just wander. They don't do anything until the heroes turn up and the Shadow has to fight them. They hate treasure, which is kind of a funny bit. Like, so there's a good piece of detail here, which is that shadows don't like treasure. They don't like any of that kind of, they don't like anything that reminds them of happiness or prosperity or whatever. Anything that might painfully remind them of life. And so if they find it, they choose a single location and they dump it, right? They'll throw it down a well, or they'll throw it, you know, in a ditch or something, right? Somewhere where it's out of sight and it can't remind them of a time when there was light and life and happiness. That's great. That's a fun image. It even says shadows actually wouldn't object to you stealing their treasure. They wouldn't. It's not stealing. They don't care about it. They want it gone. However, another thing that reminds them of life and light and happiness is living people. So they're not going to, like, let you take their gold away because they want to destroy you. So first we get, like, a fun little piece of detail, and then we get an explanation for why that little piece of detail doesn't matter. Don't tell me that your section doesn't matter, book. Make it matter. And I feel like maybe the writers feel that they can't, right? Because the Shadow is a monster that exists primarily in a kind of tactical challenge sense, right? It's always just been kind of like, ooh, a spooky shadow attacks you in the dungeon. It's fine, there's nothing wrong with it, but there's nothing really beyond that. But then they have to be put into this ecological framework, and it just doesn't really work because that's not the kind of monster they are. You know, they've been given this one-size-fits-all format, but like most one-size-fits-all things, it doesn't actually fit all. And they also seem to be instructed to hew pretty closely to the previous versions of the monster. So most of the time, that means that what we get are short entries puffed up to fill a higher word count without really adding anything that leads to gameplay. Might just be too many cooks in the kitchen. Anyway, finally, we have the Shedu. The Shedu is like a Lamassu, but a little bit different. It is a creature from Assyrian mythology, often carved as a kind of guardian figure. This entry also includes the Greater Shedu, which appeared, I think, in Monster Manual 2. So that's fine, right? We got both versions of it in the same entry. Good, that's the kind of housekeeping that we'd like to see in an updated version of a monster book. This entry's fine. The Shedu is actually like a pretty powerful and complex creature, and this is a twofer, so I don't mind the length of the entry. The only thing that I really have to criticize is the illustration, which looks dire. And it's one of those things that's like not a bad illustration in terms of like the technical merits of the artist, but what it does is illustrate the basically impossible task that the artist is trying to accomplish, which is to draw a realistic 3D kind of naturalistic version of this monster and have it not look stupid, particularly because it's not portrayed in action. It's just portrayed standing there in a kind of neutral pose. Like this is its idle animation. It looks like it's in line to pay for some beef jerky at the gas station. It's just standing there doing nothing. And what that means is that you then focus on all the ways in which the design of this creature like, doesn't really make any sense. And that's not the fault of the artist, it's the fault of the ancient Assyrians. Except it's not their fault, because Assyrian Shedus look fine, because they're not this kind of like representational art. It's clear that we've got a team of artists who are working to a brief, doing their best. And then we've got Tony Terlizzi, who is doing Tony Terlizzi stuff because that's what Tony Terlizzi does. And because he's kind of breaking from the formula a little bit more, his stuff is much better. And also because he's great, you know. But I really do think that this is an example of a monster that, if it weren't for the goal to be consistent and to have a house style, if there was more opportunity to let artists make off-model choices, the Shedu could actually look a lot better. And I think that there's an analogy there to the way that this book is written as well. We've lost some flexibility in the name of standardization. And sometimes that's not a bad thing when there are benefits to standardization, but I don't know if this is one of those instances. Anyway, the Shedu, like I've said what I had to say about it previous episodes, very powerful good beings are sometimes a challenge to incorporate into a campaign where player characters are, for the most part, good, and like a lot of other kind of angelic creatures, it's probably an agent of a power that craves order in the world, like Anu. But, you know, for that, it's fine. And actually, I rather like it compared to, you know, an angel, like a Deva or something, just because it's so weird. A creature with the body of a bull and the wings of an eagle and the head of, like, a big bearded Assyrian guy. That's got a certain weird cachet, like, you understand that that's ancient, but I don't know that it has the kind of specific associations that most, at least most English-speaking people do with, like, you know, a white-robed figure with white wings and a big glowing sword. So I think there's room for the Shedu to be fun, but I don't think that this entry does a very good job of helping us find that. Alright, that is about all the monsters we have time for today. Our next episode is going to be a bonus episode going out to all my Patreon backers at all levels. And at the end of the week, if I get it done in time, we'll have a special episode. And if not, it's going to be more monsters from Monsters Manual. But either way, I hope that you will join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.